Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Fred Obiero.
Hello, and welcome to the Ivy Podcast. My guest today is Stanley Mack, Head of Corporate Technology Support, DevOps, and QA at Millennium Management. How are you, Stanley? How's it going?
Hey, Fred. How are you doing? Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. Thanks for being on. Before we start this episode, I have one small request to our listeners. As we continue to grow the Ivy Podcast, we would appreciate if you would take just a minute of your time to leave us a review on the show, because reviews make a huge difference to podcast channels like ours. Now, time for the episode with Stanley. So Stanley, please introduce yourself to our audience and talk to us about Millennium Management, and also describe your role.
Sure. Millennium Management is a global investment management firm. I've been with Millennium for just about 7 years now. As you said before, I'm the head of corporate technology support, DevOps, and QA. In addition to that, you know, with my move to Miami a little bit over a year ago, I also serve as the head of corporate technology in Miami. So essentially my role, you know, I'm responsible for ensuring that, you know, all software that is developed by corporate technology is tested. Mm-hmm. Everything that we roll out to production is running smoothly. In addition to that, I'm responsible for a suite of SDLC tools that's used across the firm by both technologists as well as our investment teams.
Wonderful. Thanks for that intro. Agile and DevOps are some of the key initiatives that many organizations are implementing, especially given the changes we saw in the workplace due to remote work that was forced by the pandemic. In your experience, what are the best practices when it comes to implementing Agile and DevOps in an organization, that may be unfamiliar with these practices?
Yeah, I would say, you know, in general, you know, where possible, I strongly encourage in-person collaboration. That you can't underestimate the value of, you know, the water cooler talks, the coffee breaks, team lunches, and things like that typically happen in person, because you have the ability to really kind of see body language. You know, these activities bring tremendous value in building and sustaining high performing teams. Mm-hmm. Remote work requires an extra level of discipline for both, you know, the managers as well as the employees. You know, while it's not a replacement to in-person collaboration, you know, cameras provide an additional level of connectivity. So like I said before, body language is important. So, you know, one of the things, during remote working situations during the pandemic, we want to make sure that people are actually turning the cameras on while you're doing a video conference, so we can see how people are reacting, to questions, to comments, things like that. And be able to kind of limit distractions to the best of your ability.
Yes.
People have to remember that your teammates can see when you're distracted. So try to avoid looking at other screens, you know, try to close down your emails, your Slack messages, and making sure that you also have a good audio solution as well. Because a lot of times you get into a video conference, it's hard to hear other people, or people start talking on top of each other. So making sure that you're going to have that good flow is very important. In terms of kind of best practices, similar to what I've just said, I think daily face-to-face meetings where possible, you know, although emails and Slacks are a good form of communication, mm-hmm. having that face-to-face communication allows team members to be more forthcoming with information and being able to highlight areas where, you know, there should be more discussion. And then also in general, just taking a more of a iterative approach, breaking down a project or a problem into much smaller tasks and kind of building upon it. I think those are kind of two general kind of best practices that I would recommend.
Let me ask you this. Is Millennium Management, are you guys all back in the office, or is it hybrid, or is some people remote? How's it working?
We are in a hybrid work environment right now, where, you know, spend a couple of days in the office and a couple of days work at home.
And how's that been working out for you personally? Do you prefer hybrid? Do you prefer fully in the office? What's your take on that? Because as you know, we've seen a lot of companies, especially in Silicon Valley, Twitter is a recent example that Elon Musk, after the takeover, requested that all employees be back in the office. So what's your preference on when it comes to that?
My personal preference is to, you know, be in the office, like I said before, like having, you know, the in-person collaboration, mm-hmm. having, you know, those coffee breaks with your team members is invaluable. So my personal preference would be to collaborate in office. Having said that, obviously, you know, we've made it work in a hybrid work environment, and just requires, you know, like I said, managers and employees to adjust and be disciplined about it.
Okay, good. I have a follow-up question. Since we're talking on the topic of Agile and DevOps, do those two go hand in hand, or is DevOps more for like product teams and Agile more for project teams? How do you distinguish between both of those if you're overseeing a project?
I think they go hand in hand. I think the most important thing is for a team to find a good rhythm. You know, no matter how or what methodology they practice, it's really just mm-hmm. to find a good rhythm that fits the team. But I think you know, having an iterative approach to project work is usually kind of the best way to go about it. You know, if you are working on a project and, you know, you're trying to boil the ocean, it's harder to manage. You know, it takes longer to complete. So I think in general, just breaking things down into kind of much smaller tasks, right. Much more digestible pieces of information is more effective.
Part of implementing new strategies and practices involves change, both big and small, which can sometimes lead to resistance to change, as we've all experienced. Anybody that's worked in technology has run into this problem. Describe to us how leaders can implement changes and ensure that their teams fully buy into them.
So I've implemented quite a number of changes in my career. You know, not every single change has been successful, but I think for the most part, I can say that most of the changes have had the kind of full support of my teams. And I think the key to that is making sure you're open and transparent about the reason for the change. I think everyone mm-hmm. must agree that the change is needed, right? That's the first step. You know, whether or not you agree on how to or how to solve the problem is a different story, but everyone must first agree that there is a problem right. and a change is needed. And once that there's agreement there that change is needed, there needs to be awareness of what the change is that's actually coming. So typically what I would like to do is, you know, I'd gather opinions and feedback, you know, from members of the team at all levels, trying to hear different sides of the story, trying to get different opinions right. and different perspectives. And then I start to kind of formulate kind of my own plan and what I want to implement. And again, I go back and kind of socialize my plan. And as you start to socialize your plan, you know, people get a sense that of what you're trying to do. And then when you formally kind of communicate it, it's not a 100% surprise to everybody.
Yeah, and they also feel like they were involved in it. They were a part of.
Exactly. Yeah. 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 So they feel like they're part of it. They feel like, you know, they've given their feedback. At the end of the day, if you have a strong team, you know, they will understand that as long as their feedback is heard, sometimes, you know, their specific suggestion may not actually be implemented, but it's very important to at least give them a chance to voice mm-hmm. their opinion and give their suggestions. So, you know, typically what I've seen is, you know, resistance to change only occurs when people don't understand why the change is needed right. And don't understand the decision-making process. Or like I said before, if they're blindsided by the change, that's also another reason why they may resist the change. But, you know, if you're communicating this well ahead of time, socializing it, getting the right input and feedback, you know, generally, I think, you know, again, if you have a strong team, you know, they will be on board and back you up.
Do you find that doing a pilot implementation, let's say a small part of the change, doing that and then rolling it out to, like, let's say the entire department or the entire company, is that a better approach versus doing, okay, you get everybody's buy-in and then you roll it out once without doing a pilot implementation? What are the pros and cons of going one way or the other? You know, I know there's no right or wrong answer. I'm just curious how you approach that.
Yeah. I mean, similar to what I said before about kind of iterative change, mm-hmm. You know, sometimes depending on the situation, I do like to, you know, roll out a change to a small part of the organization or roll out a change to kind of test it out like a POC. But again, even in that case, I'm very clear and transparent about, you know, why I'm doing that. And typically the reason why I would do that is, to be very honest, I may be very unsure about the outcome of that change. And I tell the team, hey, this is something that I want to test and see how it goes and see if we can adapt to this change, see how people react to it. And that usually also gives me the option to undo that change. Because like I said, not every change is always successful.
Right.
But sometimes you really kind of need that kind of trial period to make that change. To see if that's something that would fit your organization. So I'm a big fan of you know, trial and error.
Right.
Again, you know, if you have a, you know, strong team that, you know, is all kind of marching towards the same goal, they should all understand that, you know, we're trying to make changes to get us to the most optimal format. And sometimes it requires a couple of iterations and we don't always get it right at the first try. In some cases where, you know, I'm very convinced about the change that I want to make, then I'll, you know, I'll roll it out, you know, all in one shot. But in the cases where either I want to test it out first or I want to make multiple changes, you know, then I would kind of do it in a smaller fashion.
Many companies are embracing a cloud migration strategy as they continue moving away from housing their own data centers. Please describe some of the biggest challenges that come with migrating to the cloud and explain how companies can prepare themselves adequately to avoid any pitfalls.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. You know, I think, you know, the most important thing is to set a very clear strategy on what kind of workloads you want to migrate to the cloud and why you want to migrate to the cloud. You know, I think, you know, not having a very clearly defined strategy will get you in trouble very, very quickly. So do you want to go back and look at your legacy applications and refactor them so that they are cloud friendly? Do you want to only focus on new applications or new workloads that you're developing? And why do you want to do this? Do you want to do this because of, you know, cost management? Do you want to do this because you want to increase the, you know, cloud skill set in your organization? So clearly defining what and why, I think, is the very first step. And then I think the next thing is really kind of pay a lot of attention to cost management. So as I've done this, you know, the one thing that, you know, really kind of surprised me was the cost management aspect of moving things to the cloud. You know, the technical aspects of migrating stuff to cloud is easier to overcome. You know, there's always going to be a technical solution, but costs can really spiral out of control.
Right.
If you don't understand how you'll be charged for, you know, cloud resources or services.
Uh-huh.
And you really have to kind of put a good process in place to monitor costs and understand the tools that you have to optimize these costs. And this actually goes for, you know, many SaaS products. You know, software as a service. It's very easy to get kind of hooked on and start using these products, and then you lose control of your costs.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's something that, you know, you definitely want to keep in mind. In the cloud, it's not, you know, if you use it, but, you know, how you use it that really kind of makes a difference.
Yeah, and one thing, just dating back to my days overseeing projects and product development, is, you know, the cost factor of it, because if you're using software as a service, you don't have to CapEx some of these things. Everything becomes OpEx. Does that affect how leaders need to view budgeting when it comes to cloud migration?
Yeah, I think that's definitely, you know, part of it, part of the equation. But, you know, from my point of view, it's more important of kind of figuring out, you know, what are the reasons why you want to go to the cloud in the first place, right? So going back to what I said before, you know, I think if you solve that, you know, the rest should come easy.
When it comes to interviewing, do you tend to get creative with your questions? What's your preferred interviewing style?
So I tend to, you know, like to have a conversation rather than an interview with the candidates that I interview. So, you know, what I'll do is, you know, I'll do a phone screen, you know, with the candidate, and I'll have a very casual conversation. I try my best not to pose it as a kind of more formal interview, because I like the person to feel comfortable. I like the person to feel relaxed. And that way you can really kind of see the true personality of the candidate. So I'll start off and ask them to tell me a little bit about their most recent role or what they're responsible for. And what I'm trying to get out of that is, can they clearly articulate why they feel their role is important and what value they're adding to their current firm. You'll be surprised how, you know, some people don't know how to articulate that. You know, they may say that, hey, if they're a software engineer, they may say, hey, I develop software. But, you know, I'm looking for a much more detailed answer that, you know, here I'm developing software for this business line, and this business line adds value to the firm by doing X, Y, and Z. So being able to kind of clearly articulate that is kind of the first thing that I'm looking for. And then, you know, I'm looking for motivation. I'm trying to figure out what really kind of drives them, what motivates them, and see if that they can be a good cultural fit to my team. You know, I strongly believe that you have to have people that will fit in nicely with your team, and that doesn't necessarily always mean that it's the most technical person.
Right.
Because sometimes you can have a very, very technical person, but they may not be able to work well with people.
They need to be
that
cultural fit, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And then every team kind of has their own little culture, and you need to make sure that, you know, that the person that you are interviewing, you know, has that potential kind of fit into that team. You know, they say, you're only as strong as your weakest link, and that goes for, you know, soft skills as well, not just technical skills.
Yeah, because the last thing you want is somebody that's really gifted in the hard skills, but then they have a problem to work with either with their teammates or other departments.
Right, exactly. And then sometimes that becomes like negative value, right? You spend more time trying to, you know, dig yourself out of,
putting out fires left and right.
Exactly.
All right, here's my last question. What has helped you to get to where you are, and what of advice would you give to someone that wants to pursue a career that's similar to yours?
I get this question quite a bit, especially on interviews with candidates. But I would say, you know, what's gotten me to where I am today is really ownership, right? So no matter what role, you know, I take on, you know, I make sure that, you know, I feel the kind of the ownership and empowerment to do what I need to achieve the best results in the role. So what I tell people is, you know, act like an owner, act like a CEO. You know, if you were to take on a new job, pretend you're the CEO of the company. How would you want things to operate? What type of things do you want to see improved? Don't limit yourself to, you know, what you see written on your job description. Mm-hmm. That's number one. Number two is, very early on in your career, you should always actively seek out a mentor, and that person, you know, should understand your role, but not necessarily be on the same team as you. And the third thing is, find a sponsor. You know, a sponsor is different than a mentor. Mentor is someone you kind of go to for advice. Hey, I'm having trouble with, one of my coworkers. You know, how would you suggest, that I deal with, a particular issue with my coworker? A sponsor is someone, you know, who has a vested interest, to promote your career. And sometimes that could be your manager, but not necessarily. You know, it could be someone, you know, in the same business line as you are, not necessarily your manager, but, you know, the person really wants to see you succeed, typically a more senior person that's able to kind of help influence your career. So I think those are the most important things. You know, going back, one is, you know, act like an owner of the role that you're in, find a mentor, and find a sponsor. And also kind of just pay attention to how you treat others, especially if you're, you know, a, manager of people. Mm-hmm. You know, be human, empathetic. You know, let the people who work for you shine. Don't always take the spotlight. You know, that's usually kind of what I try for.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Hey, Stanley, thank you so much for taking your time to talk to us today. This has been great.
Fred, I appreciate it. It was fun. Thank you so much for having me.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Ivy Podcast. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast listening platform. We really appreciate that effort. Until next time.